Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Melanie Reed, Newsroom's Investigations Editor.
And I'm Newsroom Journalist Bonnie Sumner. I work closely with Melanie in the Investigations team, which includes Judith Curran and our editors.
And we're currently in Invercargill making the Boy in the Water podcast,
which, incidentally, has gone to number one on the New Zealand podcast charts this week.
So Invercargill, of course, is 45 minutes south of Gore, and where the coronial inquest is taking place, this phase is set down for 3 weeks.
And there is a second two-week phase set down for August, which is mainly for experts like the forensic pathologists, and it's also where the American former crime scene detective Karen Smith will appear. She's who featured in the final episode of season one of The Boy in the Water, and she's been working pro bono on the case. I know a lot of you have been asking when she's going to be appearing at the inquest.
So we are going to talk about week one in court and answer some of the many questions our listeners have sent in. But just to start off with, a bit about our history covering this case. I was down south investigating another story and I went via Gore when I was travelling home to see Paul Jones, who had been calling me incessantly about his son's death. I remember it well because it was like a freezing day, midwinter 2020, and I'd never been so cold in all my life. And I grew up not far from here, so it's not like I'm not used to the cold or I'm some sort of wuss. But anyway, I walked with Paul Jones and his friend Karen Maguire from where Lockie was living with his mum in Salford Street to the end of the sewage ponds where Lockie's body was found. And I thought, this is a heck of a long way. I mean, it's always possible that Lockie walked out there, but it just didn't seem probable. Anyway, I returned to Gore with Bonnie and we started looking into the police investigation.
Yes, and that was in September 2020. And when we got there, the case had been closed, no suspicious circumstances. And you always said, Melanie, that it felt like everyone in Gore knew why we were there.
Well, that's because they kept asking us. They kept saying, what are you doing here? I bet I know why you're here. I think there's always been a lot of disquiet around this case. It is a small town, you know, population around 8,000, and everyone kind of knows everyone.
So we've actually been following this story for 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah, so back in 2020, it didn't take that long to figure out that the police investigation was substandard, and it seemed like police had come to an automatic conclusion. Lockie had drowned, so they hadn't followed the usual crime scene policing protocols. They hadn't secured the scene, so where his body was found hadn't been cordoned off, no fingerprinting around the gate he would have had to climb over. Police hadn't requested cell phone data for 2 or so months, by which time some text traffic had been lost. Key witnesses hadn't been interviewed for a month.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that former police officers we've engaged to look at the case files for us have agreed it was a once-over-lightly investigation.
Yes, and other concerns included Lockie's body being stone cold despite the water temperature and air temperature, the police dog not picking up Lockie's scent until 40 metres from where his body was found, even though he had a full nappy. There was no marks on his feet, despite him having had to have walked through a lot of thistles and across rough and stony ground.
That's right, and the finding, as we know, was death by drowning, but the problem was the post-mortem was not carried out by a forensic pathologist.
That's right, and there was really big concerns about this diagnosis, death by drowning. Remember, it was really strange when we read the pathology report because it said the lungs were unremarkable.
And we were like, if he had drowned, wouldn't he have water in his lungs? So, yeah, that was a pretty big red flag.
So one of the key issues here was that Lockie's post-mortem was done by a general, not a forensic pathologist, and people quite often ask what the difference is.
I actually brought our notes here.
Good.
To refer to that. So this is crucial. It says here, clinical pathology is the study and identification of diseases based on laboratory analysis of tissue and fluid samples, whereas forensic pathology is determining the cause of death by examining the deceased. It requires a different skill set than a clinical pathologist.
So they generally look at sudden and suspicious deaths, forensic pathologists, and they do a whole different sort of set of examinations.
That's right.
Anyway, after our first story in 2020, the police announced they'd reopened the case and did another investigation, which was essentially closed a year later. So in 2023, we did a further investigation. It was called Return to Gore.
And of course, both of those video stories can be viewed for anyone interested on newsroom.co.nz, which is great for seeing the locations. You can see Salford Street, the ponds, a lot of the people that you're meeting through this inquest.
Yeah, it gives you a really good idea. So in our second investigation, we engaged Dr. Anna Sandiford from the forensic group in Christchurch to facilitate and arrange the sample slides of Lockie's body tissue and other autopsy information to go overseas for review. We wanted an independent forensic pathologist, someone from outside of our small country, New Zealand, to review the findings that Lockie had died from drowning.
So that independent forensic pathologist was from the UK, and his name is Dr. Alexander Kolar. And he wrote in his report, which I'm just going to read from now, he said, "I do not believe there is sufficient pathological evidence provided in the report," that's the post-mortem, "to support a diagnosis of drowning as the cause of death."
Yeah, and one of the main reasons for this was the police had the post-mortem conducted by a general pathologist. So he was not fully trained to the level of a forensic pathologist because they, of course, specialise in sudden and suspicious deaths.
And Dr. Kolar also said that he couldn't exclude someone else from being involved in Lockie's death.
So again, it comes back to the fact that if the work had been done at the beginning of this investigation by the police, there would be a foundation to work from. But as we know, so much wasn't done. And one of the key elements in the UK pathologist's report is actually about lung weight, referring to drownings. You've got the report here. Yeah. So he said due to the water logging, the weight of the lungs are generally significantly elevated.
Yes, so I'll read from it. The report explains that the mean weight of a three-year-old boy's lungs is roughly 300 grams. Three-and-a-half-year-old Lockie, his lungs weighed just 245 grams, so under the mean for a boy of his age, which means there was no evidence of water logging.
Because the lung weight was not elevated.
And in fact, Dr. Kolar writes in his report, and I'm quoting here, "I am not certain on what basis the pathologist gave the cause of death as drowning. The lungs were described as normal."
So Dr. Kolar, he's going to be a witness at the second phase of this inquest.
Yes, he is. But let's get back to this phase of the inquest and the week that was, because that is what we're meant to be talking about.
Oh, yes, indeed. I have got slightly sidetracked. The This has all led to an inquest being held in Invercargill, where we are now. Auckland Bay's coroner, Alexander Ho, is presiding.
Yes, and the days run from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m, with a short day on Friday. Is that so the lawyers can fly home to their families, Melanie?
Probably, but we're not doing that, so it's lucky that we both love Southland.
That's true. So, having finished week one, Melanie, what are your first impressions?
Well, it's been a pretty intense week with lots of emotion. There's basically two camps, Lockie's mum, Michelle, her sons and supporters, and Lockie's dad, Paul, and his supporters. They both appear, to be honest, to be as staunch as each other. So outside the courtroom in the waiting area, it's always quite interesting because both sides are forced to be together. Although, of course, Michelle has been brought in and out by police through a back entrance. So as the media, we never actually saw her because she gave her evidence behind screens.
And I think for listeners, it might actually be good to explain how the room is arranged. So at the back of the room, next to the media table, there are three rows of public seating with 24 seats altogether. I counted them.
Very good, Bonnie.
Lockie's father, Paul Jones, and his longtime support person, Karen Maguire, have been in the front row for most of the week, and so have supporters of Lockie's mother, Michelle, officer. Detective Inspector Stu Harvey, remember he was in charge of the reinvestigation into the case. He sits on one of the chairs at the back each day, and there's often another one, sometimes two, maybe police reps with him.
So in front of the public gallery are the lawyers. So their backs are to the public and they're facing the coroner.
And the witness box is on the very right of the room. And of course, the coroner sits at the front facing everyone, and his judge's bench is a bit elevated so he can see the whole proceedings.
The inquest began with an opening speech by Coroner Ho, which was compassionate and articulate, as you would expect. And it was a chance to reassure everyone, but particularly Lockie's family and loved ones, that their little boy is at the heart of all of this process.
It really started off with a lot of intrigue, didn't it? Because the first witness to be called was Lockie's mother, Michelle Officer, and of course, she has never spoken publicly about her son's death, but there was some trouble setting up her witness box, wasn't there?
Yes, because she had requested a screen for privacy and mental health reasons. So we were asked to leave the room while they figured that out, and it took a good half an hour. And when we came back, there were three kind of makeshift screens.
Yeah, it looked to me like they were whiteboards with brown paper wrapped around the bottom and attached with ball clips.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't that sophisticated, but anyway, it did do the job, and they were arranged around the witness box in such a way that the lawyers and the coroner could see and talk to Lockie's mum, but she was shielded from the public gallery.
And she was only scheduled to appear for part of the first day, wasn't she? But it soon became pretty clear that her evidence was going to need much longer. We heard first from Beatrix Woodhouse, who was Michelle's lawyer. Her questioning left it open for Michelle to paint Paul Jones, Lockie's father, as quite an unreliable person.
I think calling him unreliable is flattering. We heard Michelle Officer describe Paul Jones basically as a compulsive, gambling, abusive drunk. She said he was homeless and just wanted to be with her for her house and her money, that he lied and was a very manipulative person.
Yes, she certainly built a picture of Paul having anger issues and being abusive, but there was a point pretty early on where Paul's lawyer, Max Simpkins, interjected about what she was saying about Paul, and the coroner agreed, saying it was veering into, quote, inadmissible and irrelevant evidence. On the other hand, Simpkins really set out to make Michelle out as a bad mother who didn't look after Lockie.
Yes, the questioning by Simpkins was very accusatory, basically trying to create a picture she neglected Lockie and was responsible for either causing or covering up his death. He's quite an imposing figure, isn't he?
He is, yeah, and he often says to Michelle and to other witnesses that he's the one asking the questions and to wait for him to finish asking them. But there are quite long pauses when he's forming his questions. So sometimes I can see why, if you were the witness, you'd want to jump in and start answering.
Yeah, it does feel like he gets at the witness's backs up a bit. But at one point, Simpkins put to Michelle that she'd been smoking cannabis the night Lockie died, to which she said, that's ridiculous and that's a lie.
Of course, we will find out about this in upcoming episodes, how that plays out.
So what we are certainly seeing is claim and counterclaim.
What are your impressions of Simpkins' style?
Well, what I find interesting is how different the lawyers' styles are. They each have a different approach. Simon Mount, he's the King's Counsel who was assisting the coroner. You probably couldn't get a more different style to Simpkins, could you?
No, he's very methodical, he's calm, unintimidating. He seems to put the witnesses at ease as he walks them through the evidence and the questions. I also found it interesting some of the lines of questioning from Crown Solicitor Robin Bates. So he's from Dunedin and he's the lawyer for the police, and I did read that he was involved in the original trial of David Bain. You know a fair bit about that case, don't you?
Yes, indeed I do. I have been a journalist for quite a while, and Mr. Bates, well, he's been a Crown prosecutor in Dunedin for quite a while.
And Bates did his best to show that Lockie was a great climber, chased ducks, was unafraid of water. Why do you think that was?
Well, it's kind of obvious, I think. He showed two videos to remember of Lockie running around chasing ducks a year or so before his death. What I think he's trying to do is build a picture of how much Lockie liked ducks, climbing and water. So his angle is perhaps going to be that Lockie ran away from home, climbed the gate leading to the sewage pond, chased the ducks and fell into the water.
Hmm. I think it's quite important to go over the sequence of events in Michelle's evidence, don't you?
Yes, good idea. So just to summarise for listeners, this is what she has said happened that evening. She left the courier depot around 5:30 p.m., got home, spent about 3/4 of an hour trying to fix the pineapple sprinkler, decided she wouldn't cook, picked up a pizza around 7:45. After she got home, she talked about Lockie grazing on the pizza.
Remember, she was also texting Paul, including those texts about booking a motel for her and Paul and Lockie in Dunedin for the following weekend.
Yes, of course, I've always found those texts quite interesting. So after the pizza, she says Lockie came to her saying he had pooed in his nappy but kept running away when she tried to change him. She then helped her son Johnny with his weights in his room, and when she came back out, she says she poured herself a glass of juice and that she was gazing out the window when she saw a high-vis vest on the corner. She says she thought, that's strange, it looks like a kid trying to dress like Lockie. She says she then ran out, caught Lockie up the street, and then dropped into Debbie, the neighbour's house, at which point he took off again, and that was the last time she said she saw him.
So we've heard a lot about Michelle's account, and she was actually scheduled to appear for the first part of the first day only, but she ended up being on the stand for 2 whole days, so everything else got pushed out.
That's right. After Michelle, her son Jonathan took the stand, and you'll hear from him in the next episode.
Now I think we should respond to some of the questions that have come in from our listeners. The first one is, did Lockie have pizza in his tummy at the post-mortem? It's a good question. As we know from the report from his post-mortem, it said the stomach contained about 200 cc's of food material. Now, of course, if it had been a forensic pathologist conducting the post-mortem, we would probably know exactly what the food matter was. I think it is worth quoting what we've been reporting now for nearly 4 years, and also what Simon Mountcasey said to Lockie's mother in court this week.
Oh, hang on, I'll just get that. This is what Simon Mount said to Lockie's mother. What lots of people have asked themselves is, how can it be a 3.5-year-old boy?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Runs away 1.2 kilometres, travels across some pretty uncomfortable ground, you know, sharp stones. No one out searching sees him. He doesn't respond to anyone calling out his name. He doesn't leave a scent, it appears, that is picked up by a dog until quite close to him. Do you understand how it is that people say that this just doesn't add up for them?
Yeah, and Michelle's response was, I know what happened. I know he got away.
Lastly, there has been a lot of listener feedback about the witnesses sounding rehearsed, and I did notice that the police representatives were spending a heck of a lot of time in closed meeting rooms with certain witnesses. I found it quite concerning. In fact, I asked Detective Inspector Stu Harvey, who's there every day, and of course he is the person who was in charge of the reinvestigation of the case, so I asked him, is it usual for the police to be spending so much time with key witnesses? And honestly, it was slightly like talking to a brick wall because he didn't respond to me at all. So I went to the Justice Department communications person. She came back and said that these people are in fact police witnesses. So clearly being briefed or supported by the police is not an issue here.
Coming up next, you'll be hearing from Lockie's two older half-brothers and Michelle's neighbour Debbie, who was convinced she heard but didn't see Lockie in her laundry that night.
Thanks to all our listeners and for all the feedback. We really appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.